Welcome, everybody, to episode 25 of That Round Net podcast. Today, all the boys are here, Tops and Mike, which is lovely to see. Lovely to see. And we have a huge episode to go through because we will be covering the first ever European Round Net Championship while also covering the ETS Championship on Saturday and then the squads on the Sunday. So I think the best way to do it is let's get into Saturday and let's start with giving a little bit of information about how the format and how the event was run. So for those that weren't there, the way that happened this year for the ETS Championship on the Saturday was that teams signed up for their divisions. For example, you know, all the divisions we usually have, advanced, intermediate, and gold for the open side and advanced for the women's side. 16 teams then got plucked out of those divisions in both the women's advanced and in the gold division to then make up the closed divisions, which were the pro open and the woman pro division.
Were they selected pre-tournament? Like yes. top 16 registrants?
Exactly, yes. So the points then they got throughout the year of the ETS season, their points then accumulated X amount of points, which then gained them an entry into the pro division on the Saturday. So this was really cool because, again, this is the first time we've had this sort of thing in Europe. Last year, we sort of tried to do it, but it wasn't too successful. There wasn't too many signups. We ended up mixing divisions and playing one big open division as well as a women's advanced. So it was really cool, again, for the first time to also have 16 men's or open pro teams and then 16 women's pro teams too. And a huge turnout for the women as well. I think we're like 42 teams in total on the Saturday just competing. So already like a really cool set up for the event. And then if we get into the event itself, as Tops and I discussed a lot last week, I mean, if we start on the women's side, we had so much talent in the field that, I mean, I was watching the stream, obviously. I can't believe anyone wouldn't be watching the stream at this point. Mike, did you watch it?
Oh my God, Scott, a direct dig. I told you, if someone else streamed it, I would have watched it, but I refused to support Tops with content.
100% fair.
It was nice, guys. Thank you.
Tom, you're going to leave the chat right now. It's so good. We're going to... No, we need you. We need you. No, but on that note, let's talk a little about the women's division, the women's pro on Saturday. Again, 16 teams, a huge number of nationalities. We had so many top teams. And we discussed it last week. We had Out of Order with Nora Haas and Lou Washburn. We had Towerful of Laura Kunzelman and Ronja. Why must I forget her second name sometimes? Inform.
Ronja Lauren.
Thank you. Then we also had Push and Dives of Ines and Natasha. We had the other finalists of, Tiramisu of Megan and Danny. And I mean, the names go on. There's so many top teams that was really fun to watch this division because it's the first time in Europe we've had such a stacked field on the women's side where it seemed like pretty much everyone was there. But Tops, tell us a little bit about the event and how much you got to see of it before we build up to the finals.
So in general, it was very busy for me because we also had a massive crew and I had to manage a lot of things. But obviously we had so much talent in there, and even like in the women's pro division, there were the top teams that we have in Europe competing against each other. And it was also very nice because then we had a women's advanced division two, where the usual suspects would not play in, and also a lot of new teams could compete also for very good placements. And we saw Towerful playing together once again, like... I think this is their second or third ETS they play together. And of course, should I talk about the placements? I will talk.
Sure.
I'll talk about the biggest thing, like, right, as a self-proclaimed, Tops hater, not watching the stream, like, obviously the biggest result is Tiramisu over Towerful, which, I'll give you guys credit. Like, you guys put it in the ether as definitely possible.
Thank you. It was kind of a dream, as you may saw on the stream, that I was already very emotional in the final because our girls did win in two, and it was a very convincing game because Dani also had 6 points in a row, bringing out massive serve pressure. I think also Megan had two or three aces, and I mean, if you have that amount of points already from the service line, the rest is just, playing through. And it was really good to see, because also Laura and Ronja had a solid game, but it was from the day and the performance, Tiramisu unbeatable on this day. And they looked really strong already coming up to the final and then just performing a massive game. It was just fun to watch them and definitely very deserved. And I also talked to Laura afterwards. She said in Vienna, it was worse for her losing against Tiramisu, because now she's kind of used to it. So, yeah, I'm very happy for them. I think they build up a lot of momentum, especially since Vienna, or before that, or even with London. Yep. Then coming
in Stockholm, Vienna. Winning when Laura was not there.
Yes, exactly. And it just feels very good to see them up there. And I think they really earned their way. They put so many hours in there. And I'm looking forward to see them also in the championships, because both teams that were in the final, of course, also play in the championships.
Yeah,
I'm going to ask that. So Tarafal and Tiramisu will both see at the STS championship?
Yes.
Nice. It is funny, like Tiramisu, I think like going into like either last year or a couple years ago, it's like Tiramisu's the top team in Europe, and then they didn't do as well, you know, compared to other people, and Lara came up. And so having them come back, like, have they really just been kind of working hard all year? And
They were grinding a lot. And the thing was, I think they had this video that was on Future Rounded also, that had millions of views, and also on the Spikeball channel, I think they posted it. And I think then people expected so much from them that they could not really, you know, follow that up. And if you can't follow that up, you have the feeling of kind of you're not succeeding anymore, you see. And I feel like now they've been over it and just invested a lot of time and yeah, just trained a lot. And now you can see they both are so strong at the moment, especially Surf Pressure is very unique from them, I feel. And I'm very looking forward, because I see them now potentially winning also the championships in the US. And then it will be very heated again, I tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, I joked earlier when talking about we're not surprised that Tiramisu won. But I will say that it was definitely the final that the spectators wanted. And it was nice to see that after pool play, they managed to get the one and the two seed. So they would then, again, avoid each other until the final with Laura and Ronja beating out of order Nora and Lou in the semis. And then Tiramisu beating Push and Dives in the other semis, with then Lou and Nora getting the third place mini-final game. But yeah, it was so happy to see the final that we wanted come at the end of the tournament. And yeah. I mean, we've talked about it. Like they continue to take their game to the next level with every tournament that's going. I think personally, the confidence of Stockholm would have really set them on the right level and given them the right confidence to go into the end of the season. And you just saw it. Every tournament, they got closer and closer. And then Vienna beating Laura and Lou. And then, I mean, this event can't be too much of a surprise. Especially with how solid they played on the stream, like you said, like six aces from Danny in the first game, and yeah, a handful in the second as well. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I have to ask: is Laura just washed? Right, she's just bad now.
I think Laura's also not very used to losing, so I think it's also a experience for her. But I feel like it's if they play as powerful, maybe next season committed together, they will also destroy. But changing every tournament the partner is just not giving you the confidence with someone like you. I feel like you can perform even better when you have a fixed partner for a season, and I think that's what we see now from Laura and Ronja. I think when they play together next season, they can also be a tough matchup for Tiramisu. But like Tiramisu earned the way together, Laura was like this kind of out of nowhere pro player that can win with anyone she plays for tournament. But now the competition got so good that even she needs to get a fixed partner, I feel like, to also be on top again.
And I'll also say, just for devil's advocate, and I mean, and Laura will know this, as well as Ronja, but again, if a team's getting 6 to 9 aces against you a game, you've got to improve your serve receives. All said that Danny and Megan, they have improved their game dramatically throughout the season. But I think mainly, again, because I don't think Laura and Ronja played particularly poorly. I did think Tiramisu did play very well. But you can't be getting ace 6 to 9 times a game. I did watch the game and I was looking mainly at Lauda, and I think Lauda a couple of times was just trying to play mind games sometimes and trying to like move over towards the right. And I just think, again, there's much higher level servers than Danny in the sport around it. And we're not seeing players having to do this mind game or baiting as we saw Lauda do in the final. I think there's one moment particular for me. Danny got the ball. It was in the first game, I believe. They were up 1 or 2 points. I think she just aced Ronja, and now she's serving towards Lauda. She got an ace against Lauda on the right hand. It was a really good cut. Lauda was quite far back. I think in general, both of them serve received quite far back. But anyway, then on the second serve, on the third serve, this was when she got like back-to-back consecutive aces. She then aced Ronja. I think it was a bad touch. And then on the fourth serve, Lauda then stood really far over on Danny's right-handed serve and just said, hey, go on, hit the left, basically. And then Danny did. And Danny then got another ace, like a clean no-touch ace. And I was just like, I was in the position where it was just like, I don't, again, Danny's a very good server and can serve with both hands, but it's like, don't cheat or don't do that. To give yourself that best opportunity, it's like serve receiving Vinny on his right hand. It's like, well, they're just going to hit you with the left. I think they'll definitely be looking back towards their serve receive mainly, or at least I hope they do, moving into the STS Championship later this month.
Yeah, for sure. On another note, we have Nora and Lulu claiming third place, which is also very strong. Nora has also got the German Championships in the female category, which was also a very convincing game with a partner. I don't know how often they played together, but she was like Sabine. I didn't see a lot this season on stream or something else, somewhere else, but it worked out really well for them. And they just won every game out there, got the first, and now with this confidence, they also secured the third spot from Pius and Dias, who were really well performing before that, but in a three games matchup, they secured the third and the second set, and yeah, it just looked so very convincing. I was kind of surprised by the performance, but it's very well deserved.
I think before we move on to the Open Pro, I think the last thing to mention on that is it'll be interesting to see what thoughts are in these players' minds in regards to next year. You said just earlier that Nora won the German Championship with Sabine, but it'll be interesting to see who they're going to play with next year. I mean, Nora and Lou only played in 3 tournaments this year, two ETS events, one in Paris and then the championship. And then I think they played another tournament in Germany together, which I think they claimed second place at. So it'll be interesting to see again, what are the plans of players for next year, especially when we talked about the importance of team chemistry, as we saw Tiramisu taking the championship down and being one of the very few women's teams playing as a team for that throughout the whole year.
Yeah. That's going to be very interesting in the future. And I'm looking forward for the team announcements. I hope, in the off season we will find some time so we get new Instagram channels, new reels.
Indeed.
And next up, we're gonna, of course, we need to talk about also Open Pro Division, where we had kind of a surprise, I would say. So overall, I would say there was a side of the seeding where it was very tough because kind of all the crazy names are out there. It's like Pur Combiar, Hustling Brothers, Powerline, Eisenträger Sima, all in the same direction of the bracket. On the other side, we had Pain Drops, Erzo Petrü, Kandula Visek, and also Never Cold. And I feel like the known teams from Europe are kind of Pur Combiar, Hustling Brothers, RCG, Powerline, and Eisenträger Sima. And they were all stacked together, and it was the same situation as the Euros we had before. So it was very interesting to see that we had the same matchups, but this time very different outcomes. So, for example, Hustling Brothers this time won against Pur Combiar, and the Eisenträger Sima against Powerline in 2 sets, actually, where the first one looked very convincing for the Powerline, where everybody was like, okay, Powerline is back, let's go. And also, before the game started, Nelson came up to me, I've heard your podcast. We need to talk later. Just because I said, like, I don't see Powerline, of course, on the number one spot, but it was only joking. He knows also that, like, they are at the moment not there to just beat Eisenträger Sima. They are out of the world at the moment, in my in my opinion, is like there's so much between them and other teams at the moment. And they showed, clearly showed in not, I think they lost one against Eisendrager-Siem, against the Hasling brothers, but the rest was only two sets all the time.
Mm-hmm, indeed, yeah. As you explained it really nicely in regards to that side of the bracket. I mean, no quarterfinal or semifinal is easy, especially in the European Championship or the ETS Championship. However, yeah, we did have all of those names that we very much know from a European perspective on that same side of the bracket, with the Eisendrager-Siemer winning in two over RCG Powerline, Hasling Brothers, as you said, winning over Paul Combien. And then on the other side of the bracket, we then had RCB Drew play against was it Kandula and Jakub in the quarterfinal, which went to three sets, I believe.
Yeah, it was Visek. It was help me with the name.
Jakub Visek.
Yeah, exactly. Kuba. Yeah.
Yeah, Kuba, as we know. Yes, Kuba from the Czech Republic playing with Ravi Kandula from the US, of course, where they gained third place in Paris, ETS Paris, to gain enough points to play in the championship pro division. Yeah, they lost in three to RCB Drew in the quarterfinals with then Never Cold, which ironically we talked about last year and asking, will they heat up? And they definitely did heat up for this tournament. It was the other way around. Okay, yeah, other way around. So Drew against Kandula and Kuba, and then Pain Drops versus Never Cold.
For me, it was very interesting to see, because as we talked about it already in a podcast, but I will want to emphasize this once more, the Swiss community started to travel to all those European tournaments and now really bringing in also their quality. And I think nobody was expecting that RCB Drü will go this far in the tournament, because just recently on the Swiss Nationals, they got fifth and they didn't really perform well there. But then you see when the seeding is decent and you have just a great day, you can basically, you know, go everywhere. And RCB Drü really performed very well, especially I feel like Ramon Felix was on fire surf-wise, and Merlin Baumeler didn't really perform that well in the finals. But before that, I think he was also very, very athletic and very fast. So he added up a lot to these matchups. And then they beat Never Cold in two, but against Eisendrager-Siemer, you know, against the German train, you need to have your best game. And I feel like that was not the case for RCB Drü. But still, very good performance. Second place overall, impressive.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, again, they were definitely the surprise package of the Open Pro Division on the Saturday. And, I mean, we say surprise. I personally wasn't that surprised, because we all know Ramon Felix from Swiss Mixed at Worlds, where he played with Lauda. And they had had a couple of tournaments this year, but maybe just slightly underperformed. But when I saw the bracket, and I saw that they had to go through Pain Drops and then they'd get even Never Cold or Ravi and then Kuba in the semis, I was thinking they have a great, great opportunity, and fair play to them to make the most out of it. And it was also cool to see, and also cool to watch, because again, Swiss come with so many numbers. It's absolutely incredible to see any of their teams play in the end stages of a tournament.
Yeah, they were really present. It felt like the Germans were at Worlds, super, a lot of people, and were really hyping up. But this time, Switzerland was on fire. They had so many people. They were so loud. And it was just really nice to see how they got fired up in the games. And they were just all the time around the streaming tent. We had a lot of fun. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the Swiss crowd. And I hope we see that even more next season.
And from several other nations, too, for that matter.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully.
Yeah. So and then to conclude then the Open Pro Division, we obviously, of course, had Eisendrager-Siemer, as we mentioned, winning into the final against RCB Drew. And then we had Hasling Brothers winning three against Never Cold of Yannick and Jarro. Overall, again, an incredible tournament to watch and follow. I thank you, Tops, for giving me that opportunity to follow the tournament, as well as I'm sure many other 100 people that, or hopefully 1,000 that have tuned in across the weekend to watch the event, because it was really fun watching the stream, especially from my end in the US, but I'm sure for other people wherever they were in the world.
Yeah, thank you. It was also a pleasure to stream it, and a lot of people reached out to me. And yeah, I say thank you for that. I couldn't thank everybody, but everybody who shoot me a message or just called me on the spot, which also happened a lot of times, just say thank you. And guys, I highly appreciate the support. Okay, with that being said, we go to the Sunday competition, which was the squad format, if mm-hmm. you want to elaborate, Scotty B.
Yes, so Sunday, again, squads format. How do I put this in the best way possible? I really want to bring light to this event and to gain, and so more people understand how this event came about. Because again, we could have just had an ETS championship this year, and that would have just been the normal. You know, it would have been a step up from last year where we didn't have pro divisions. It would have just been, you know, one big category and then we play. But we had pro divisions this year. But then again, as Euro, the new Euro board, like Amelie, Benny, Muggle, myself, we decided to have this Sunday tournament of this, you know, international event where countries have come together and compete as squads. I think not too many people were aware of like the backstory and everything behind this. And I think it's quite important that we acknowledge it at least, not for my sake, I don't care, but for the sake of especially other people on the board, especially Amelie, Benny, Muggle, but I mean, especially Amelie, because I kid you not, and I'm saying this out like on the podcast, of really like really purposely, because she put in so much effort into this event from the very first day we discussed the format, towards the hundreds of group me messages and WhatsApp messages and decisions that needed to be made up into the event. So I just want to mention that and say that, because honestly, this event would not have happened without her. And it was really nice from a Euro board perspective that this sort of format that we envisioned back in January, February now came to fruition in Padova, Italy. And I think it's important that also people see that, you know, these ideas and people are doing, you know, they occur and it happens. So on that note, as we bring in
something just really quick, I also want to thank you. The format was really, really cool idea. Also from the Euro board, I think this year worked really well also from Euro side, and there was a lot of time spent also. And especially Benny and of course Amelie were on the spot. And Amelie, I think Amelie and Benny did, in even when they were playing, had so much things to organize and so much things. They had the whole time decision after decision after decision to make on the spot. We're going to talk after our preview a little bit about it, hopefully when we still have time. But organization-wise, it was a bit tough, because not Euro-wise, but the event organization was a bit rough. And Amelie and Benny did really a great job to make it the best that we possibly could. Okay.
Appreciate that. And I'm sure we'll have time to talk about that a little bit at the end. But on that note, let's dig into Sunday. So again, Sunday, the format, for those that don't know. Sunday, we had, originally, I think we had 18 teams signed up for the event. Unfortunately, a few teams dropped out because they couldn't fulfill a whole squad of three men's and three women's teams, and therefore either couldn't come or a last minute decided it wasn't economically the best decision for them. So we ended up having 15 teams. 15 countries coming to the event, which is awesome. Again, acts like a mini Worlds. If we remember back to Worlds, we had 32 or 33 teams competing at the World Championship last year in Belgium. So again, it's like our mini Worlds and a really good opportunity for squads to come together and then, you know, observe and assess where they're at in compared to their performance last year, and also compared to where they're at in regards to other countries. That we had the format of bracket and seeding was already determined beforehand. And that seeding was done by ETS points gained by players within the squad, as well as previous results at international events such as Worlds last year. Coming into then the event, we had three men's teams, three women's teams competing together. And if there was a tiebreaker, for example, 3-3, after all six matches were taking place, and all six matches were taking place at the same time, we then have a tiebreaker of a mixed game, one game to 21. Unfortunately, we didn't get any tiebreakers, which is so sad.
And it was really close. It was really close.
It was so close. Imagine if France and Austria in the semi-final would have gone to it. But anyway, we'll get to that. So again, we had 15 teams competing, and already from the very first round of play, we had some really awesome and tight matchups, obviously between the 8 and 9 seed, as well as the 7 and 10 seed. The 8 and 9 seed, the 8 and 9 seed being Great Britain and Sweden, and then the 7 and 10 seed being Denmark and Spain, if I'm not mistaken, tops.
Yeah. We were trying, like, the round of 16. We started with, I think the first one was Spain versus Denmark. We had a little bit, we needed a bit more time for setting up, but then we started and covered as much as possible, of course. With the squad format, it's not easy to switch through games because we have a fixed setup. And then, of course, we can't really bring all the cameras onto the field because then we would even have even more destroyed equipment as we already have. But we started with Spain versus Denmark, which was a really close game. And what I love about the squad format, it's just people finish their game, go over to the other game and just hyping the crowd. And come on, let's go. We're going to win this. And it's just, it's not really, I think in the stream you heard it and you could kind of feel it. But if you're there, you get also very invested. Because there are people, that's not only you as a team perform for a country, but also you as a team perform for the rest of the team. So it's a very different situation. And I really like the atmosphere of it. Because as I said, when the set is over and someone won their set, they directly run to the next one and say, hey, come on, we won this and let's go. And it's just such a cool thing to have, because we always have people then and they are firing up the crowd and just being really, really into it. So we had Spain versus Denmark, which was really close. It was a 4-2, I think, in the end. And then we switched over directly on the left side of the field was also the UK, where Scotty Beeks, of course, was missing. But they played against Sweden. And this was the first game that really was so close to getting to the mixed decider, but then in the end the women's team of Sweden won against Becky and her partner, and it was really, really intense game. And I liked also how everybody stopped playing because we just wanted to see the outcome of this game. It felt like this is kind of the same situation we had on the start of the season in Paris when Never Cold firstly beat Hustling, there also the field was empty and there were 100 people just watching that game and just seeing, okay, is this gonna happen now? And everybody was super excited. And this is for every matchup, it's just so good. And I like the format a lot. And both teams were really, like, I'm not super familiar with the teams from Sweden or UK. I mean, obviously, I know the people, but like, they're not the top nations for Rounded at the moment, but still you get so invested in their games just because it's so heated and so interesting to see who's going to win now and what is going to be the point. Because when you have 3-3 or something, the other game is just, the mixed game is so important for the whole nation that they will win. They need to win it. We sadly didn't have the situation, but also the games were just insane.
Yeah, from the stream of what people could follow, it looked incredible to watch and to be a part of. And moving on then to the quarterfinals, where we then of course had Denmark and Sweden advancing. We had a lot of quarterfinals that I felt weren't too close. Most of them went as expected, with a top seed in all of them advancing to the semi-finals, with that being France, Switzerland, Austria and Germany. Switzerland were then to meet Germany in the semi-final, and on the other side we had France v Austria on the other semi-final. And I think we were expecting Germany to beat Switzerland quite relatively comfortably, but on the other side of the bracket we also had the very, very, very close encounter where it could have went to a playoff, with it almost being 3-3 at the end of the six games. Tell us a little bit about that matchup, because I think just from the clips I've seen, the Austria-France matchup looked amazing.
So we had the thing, because production-wise, we knew Germany wouldn't have another source of coverage. So we, and a lot of Germans called me, guys. A lot of German calls called me to cover the game. So we covered Germany against Switzerland on the other side. of the court, we had Austria against France, and France was streaming the event. They had all the Instagram streams in one stream together. Louis Schouf and his partner did make this happen, and it's really cute. They are also with the flags on the cheeks and something like that, and with the dresses. They did make the stream. I really enjoyed that. And they had all the scores of the individual games on the same time, which is a very good idea. And they streamed the games from France. And the thing was, we hopped over. I was joining the crowd because, of course, Austria and stuff like that, and we couldn't bring them over. All the games were ongoing. And when I arrived over there, it was Pau Combien against Powerline, which is for me kind of the start of my rounded career. Every time I knew, okay, those two teams probably gonna meet somewhere, semis or finals, and then it's gonna be a big game. And it was one hell of a game. When I came over, we had a rally where they had seven soft touches after each other. So Pau Combien soft touch set, a Powerline soft touch. One goal, and I was like, oh my god, what is this game? And I just was there 30 seconds, everybody was freaking out. And then we always stopped, like the Austrians were cheering, Gemma, Gemma, Gemma. And then the French people were chanting, Ale, Ale. Like it was insane. I was like, the girlfriend of Benny, Lara, she said, like, I can't see it anymore. It's not possible. I can't see it anymore. It's too crazy. And the last game, the deciding game that was ongoing for the longest time, was Powerline against Pau Combien. I mean, that was like a movie, you know, when you think beforewards, how should it be more dramatic? How many people can you get involved? Then you say, okay, Powerline against a freaking Pau Combien in a free set game, and then you will have everybody, and it was exactly like that. It was so good. I'm nervous when I talk about it. And they really had crazy games. I mean, Chapelier and Lacombe lost against our boys, Rafael Jonas and Marcus Anderle, which was for me kind of a big deal, because Lacombe Chapelier did win, or they did have a second place in ETS before it, and our boys didn't really well perform this season, but then they made this really important win. And Houston Dives lost against Tiramisu, and you know,
it could have just went so many ways. It could have went 4-2 before the matchup. You could have been up 4-2 to France, or 4-2 Austria, or 3-3 is probably the most likely, you know, scoreline. So yeah, from the side, it was amazing to follow that event. And As you mentioned, yeah, RCG Powerline ended up then clutching out in the third set, the Pau Combien, to then advance Austria through to the finals against Germany.
We even had one player, Tom Einert, who was playing Worlds for Austria and now playing Euros for France, and that's just crazy, you know. There was so much things involved. I loved that, and yeah. Then Austria advanced against France, and they went into the third place matchup against Switzerland, where they also won 4-2. And in the final, we saw very strong Germany dropping one single game, and that was Tiramisu again against the number one seed from the women's, and it was Ronja and Tina Gulden, of course.
That's the point when if you're a Tiramisu, you're looking to the rest of the squad like, Come on, guys.
What is it?
I want the ETS Championship on Saturday. I want all my games on the Sunday. I'll be every nation you power in front of me. Like, boys, come on. Girls, boys, come on. Come on.
It was kind of like that. But yeah, very strong performance. We also covered the game of Marcus Anderle and Rafael Jonas against Fabi Klaus and his partner Ivo Heinen. Ivo Heinen and Marcus Anderle playing on the first day together. So everything was set. And they didn't really, like, it was not a really close game, but we had some awesome rallies. We had insane touches. But
incredible foot set by Marcus too.
Yes. I will definitely bring that also as an extra video, because everybody needs to see that. And it was overall, it was a bit weird that we didn't have any observers, I feel like, because in our game, there were a few plays, a few scenes where you said, that's not really, I don't know, if the call was right, or they had a lot of redos and stuff. But overall, it was deserved for Germany. They had just a very good quality in all of their teams, and you could definitely tell that they are just at the moment one step further than Austria or the rest of Europe, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that like brings us really nicely on to sort of concluding the event. So before we do sort of touch up on those thoughts and talk about some of other things surrounding the event, we should just name that France then went on to beat Switzerland in the third place playoff to gain a place on the podium, with Germany, of course, beating Austria in the final. But yeah, to round off, again, we talked about it after Worlds, Mike. I'm sure you remember that. Although Worlds was such an incredible event and everyone's talking about results, but if we take a step back and look at sort of the bigger picture, the best thing for RoundNet was that this event occurred, and, you know, NGBs became more organized and structured by having to think about, okay, the selection process, how do we want our athletes to act? How do we want them to, you know, look with jerseys? Like, it forces NGBs to become more organized and structured, not just for this event, but then thinking about, okay, these events down the line, you know, Worlds 2024, European Championships again that will happen potentially in 2 years. You know, the bigger picture is for NGBs to really think about the bigger picture and the plans forward, and it forces them to do and take certain steps maybe they wouldn't if there wasn't these sort of incentive/mini fun tournaments. That we say mini and fun only because I'm looking at over like a 20-year picture. If you think about Olympics and stuff like that. But I wonder if you have anything to add, just looking at it from the outside and sort of comparing it to Worlds, and what thoughts you had on it regarding Sunday.
A few things. One, irrelevant to that, Scott, didn't you not have Austria on the podium?
Austria,
almost, yes, Scotty B.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
In your predictions.
Right, you win some, you lose.
I'm just kidding.
I got tiramisu on the Saturday. I'll lost the Austria one on the Sunday.
I think. I think this is like, it is cool to see, because I think it's like the natural progression of like where you would want it to continue. So like, you shouted out right the group, but like it is very cool to have that, because I think like Worlds was obviously very successful, and like that you just did a certain aspect of that. But I think, like you said, like these types of events are also just great for everyone. So it's like, I'm just happy that it was continued, and it's not like I think seeing the initiative from the leaders and not saying like, no, we'll just have Worlds next year, versus like, no, let's have our own championship. I also think it makes me very jealous for like the Europeans, because like you can't have this right over the US and Canada. We have like three countries within a bazillion miles. So it's like very cool that Europe is able to do this. And I think it's going to be a big proponent of how good, or it's going to help all the European countries, you know, probably win Worlds next year. but also the biggest takeaway was like, yeah, definitely still a hot take. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing for me is that like Germany won, which isn't like crazy because they were great at Worlds. But like we were talking at the end of last year, like Germany's just gonna keep going because of how they excelled. But it's cool to see other groups come in. RCB, does that stand for Brussels?
Yeah, around that club, Basel. No?
Basel.
Is it? No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basel.
Good.
But overall, like I think it's just such a cool initiative. Like it's, yeah. It's just I'm very jealous.
Maybe I'm wrong. Sorry, Mike, to burn. I think
they'd
kill me if I get it wrong.
Oh, yeah, it could be awesome, Dan.
My apologies.
It's almost like it shouldn't be RCB because there's so many different B's in the world. If I here, it would be Rudder Club Boston. So
RCB.
Yeah, it is funny. But anyway, yeah, like I don't know the word. It's very cool what's going on there. And it's great for, I think, just European RoundNet in general that you're able to do this. I mean, I don't know why you couldn't do it with the Worlds. Could you have like a Worlds warm up in like May, you know, to get people hyped, see the pre rankings?
Yeah, the pre rankings, pre mini tournament. Again, we're still in that threshold right now of a sport of, yeah, everyone's happy to go and compete because, you know, there's the ones I'm off for their country. But if they had to go three or four times and put in X amount of effort, energy, and without no pay, even not just for the athletes, but also for all those people who are running the NGBs, it's like, you know, there's a threshold that until money starts coming into the sport, it's very hard to go over that threshold because, you know, everyone has a threshold. You can't continue to do everything and travel everywhere without any sort of
We talked about this so much, but it's also just another showing of like squad tournaments are cool. Like the squad tournaments are cool.
100.
Like that's just what it is. That's the takeaway. Squad tournaments are cool.
We're going to see more of them as the sport continues again. So we have more numbers and more opportunities for squad tournaments like this. And on that note, I mean, we have the American Spikers League that are also going again next year and having an event, I believe, in Orlando in the beginning of February, for those who are not familiar, but definitely should check that out because that's going to be an incredible squad event also based in the US this time. But as we sort of conclude out this episode and this podcast, again, this also was the first event, so there's also going to be a lot of things still to improve on and to change potentially for years coming. Tops, you mentioned earlier about, you know, some things in regards to the event being, you know, maybe of some position of improvement for. What did you think?
Yeah.
Were there any big things from you, of course, being there, and Pike and myself only watching from afar?
So we had certain... So the hosting, the Padova did host this event, and they did host a great sports event, but they were not really used to RoundNet. And when it comes to that, there were certain things that were kind of not well organized, especially things like you should have volunteers that put in scores or redraw lines so that you also can use them. Because we had occasions where the pro players had to do their own lines because the lines that the organization made were just 4 or 5 centimeters off, which is, I don't know, Mike, not
that 12 feet, yeah.
Well, probably a feet or a finger. I don't know. But it was very off, and that's just things you could easily avoid. Or there was a call at 10:15, someone from the volunteers from the organization said, okay, now it's over. Because they thought it was about time and not the 21 points.
Oh.
And I mean, come on. It's like there were some things. I mean, there were some things that really didn't add. And also we had a DJ at the end of the squad competition or in the afternoon of the squad competition. And if you have a stream, it's not possible to have copyright music on the field. And it's just something where you have to think, okay, hey, there's the stream going on. Maybe we need to look, how can we do it without shutting down the stream? Because otherwise we have 400 people who can't follow the event. And a lot of people were even on watch parties and stuff like that. And Twitch is...
Yeah, it's only 400 viewers. It's only 400 people clicking. It's probably more like, you know, 800 to 1,000 people who are having watch parties and et cetera.
A lot of people were involved with it, and if Twitch says, okay, that's too much copyrighted music, they're going to take it off because they get also legal troubles for it. And I'm just in the middle and saying, hey, could we turn down the music, or do we need this music now and stuff like that? And I don't feel like I should be in this position. It should be more the focus about RoundNet and not the surroundings, you know. And that was something that I felt was a bit off to me. And I hope we can find next time a solution where we have European championships somewhere where the hosting community is really also involved in the sport as overall, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of it was a bit messy, and I would say as a player, I think it was not that bad. Or sometimes when you had direct things to do with the organization, I think it was not really good. And also, it should be a thing that everybody in the organization should speak English. And that was not the case. And it was very difficult beforewards and on the spot to communicate with them. And I feel like at a European level of an event at this scale, that's just a given thing. I feel like it should be a given thing.
I think, I can see that those frustrations and some things like that. I'll add, and by sort of concluding this episode, by saying that I think it's awesome that we are getting communities, whether that be with little or some or a lot of experience, wanting to host these events. I think that's already a really positive thing. And I think it's awesome that, you know, Padova, I mean, I believe also they were only one of very, very few who actually applied to host the event. They're also hosting an event that's very new to the RoundNet community in regards to the squad championship on Sunday. So I also give them a huge amount of credit for the amount of work they put in prior to the event. On some of the small organizations things, I mean, again, it's difficult to get everything right, and a lot of that comes with experience. I hope, if anything, that motivates more communities and NGBs to apply to host more events in 2024, so that, again, we, you know, everyone has a choice in regards to who hosts these big major events. So that's sort of what I'll end with. I'll say, yeah, from what I saw from the outside, it looked a lot of good things, and it was awesome to see them cover the event so well from their social medias and stuff, and did a lot of things really nicely. But of course, yeah, as we move forward in RoundNet, for big events like this, we want very organized and experienced TDs, but you also don't get any experience without hosting events. But hopefully down the line, we're going to get more and more experienced TDs, and also more people applying for these big events.
It's what you call growing pains, Scott.
Growing
pains. You call it growing pains. I wouldn't know him. I stopped growing when I was 13. But, you know, then that's it for this episode of that RoundNet podcast. Yeah.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Great outro. No, on that note, let's conclude episode 25 of that RoundNet podcast. As always, lovely that you guys were here listening. Mike Tops, thank you guys for being here. Thank you for the stream this weekend. And we will see
you welcome
next week for episode 26 of that RoundNet podcast.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.